engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Good evening. Welcome. It is 5:09 here in the city. Cold front coming, and we ain't got no rain. We need it to rain. My grass is just kind of brown at this point. Way too early for it to already be brown for the winter. Welcome to the program. It is Eric Erickson here. News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. The phone number 404-872-0750 1-800-WSB-TALK. I have to admit it. I have to confess. I went to bed. I did. I wanted to see the end of the game. I was watching the Cubs make history. And then the game got tied. And I knew the game got tied. It was my fault that if I continued to watch, the Cubs were going to lose the World Series. And I took one for the team, folks. I did. I decided I had to go to bed so the Cubs would win. And they did. And it was glorious. 108 years later, the Cubs, I mean, and you know, I've got friends today who are very upset that the Cubs won, not because they like the Cleveland Indians, but because they liked that the Cubs were lovable losers. And now they're no longer lovable losers. They're winners. I personally wanted them to win, and they won. This moment in time, they are God's team. Now, this could only happen in 2016. Only in the age of Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump could the Cubs win the World Series. It's going to be another 108 years before they're even in it again, and no guarantee that they'll win it. But they won it. That's what counts. The Cubbies won. The Indians, well, I'll root for you next time, maybe, but you're not the Cubs. I guess, I'll root for the Braves, but I mean, it's the Cubs. Been a Cubs fan since I was a kid. A buddy of mine who is from Chicago, who, I mean, he is the most rabid Cubs fan I know. I sent him an email this morning and told him congratulations. He had been up in Chicago. He went up for the weekend games and just stayed instead of going back to his office. Got an email from him at about 9:45. He was just leaving the bar. He'd been there all night long. I don't blame him. He was, I mean, what a game. I mean, in the beginning, though, so we were putting the kids to bed last night, and they were up by 2 points, and then they were up by 3 runs, and then it's 4, and I'm like, we can go put the kids to bed. It's safe. And then come back, and their pitcher's worn out. The Indians start racking up points. You get rain in there, and what a game. But I knew I had to go to bed. If I didn't go to bed, the Cubs were going to be jinxed. I mean, this is the same thing like with LSU and the Saints. If I watch, they're probably going to lose. Like, it used to be my dad. If my dad watched, we knew that LSU was going to lose. So we wouldn't let him watch, and they would win. And now I guess it's me. I realize it's all superstition, but I'm telling you, I wanted to stay up so bad. Most of my friends stayed up. Most of my friends kept their kids up all night to watch it. Not me, because I would have jinxed them. And they would have lost. And it was more important to me that the Cubs win than I got to watch the game. So I want you to know, it's on me. Okay, I want to, because I'm already getting questions on this, the exit polls. You know, Hillary Clinton has lost 60 electoral college votes in hypothetical race if the election was held today sort of thing. She was up like 330-something last week, and she's now down in the Fox. I'm using Fox News now. My base level has always been 272. That's where she was in the electoral college. Fox now has her at 273. But even so, she's fallen 60 points. In a week, in their electoral college estimation. So, I mean, she only needs 270 wins, so she's still 3 ahead. But, I mean, the trend lines are terrible for Hillary Clinton right now. And I keep waiting for another Donald Trump hit to break because, I mean, these are the Clintons. This is what they do. But that it hasn't happened. Maybe they got nothing else on him. Maybe they did what they said the Republicans had done, which is they didn't take him seriously. But now I'm getting a lot of questions. The election's on Tuesday. The exit polls, aren't the exit polls going to be wrong? Well, first of all, I reject the notion that the polls are wrong. Yes, the polls are all over the map, but the polling averages are all pretty consistent. 3 to 5 points ahead. Real Clear Politics has her at 1.7% ahead, largely because of the LA Times tracking poll, which no one else uses. All the other surveys have her about 3 to 5 percentage points ahead. And the reason is they don't use the LA Times tracking poll. They don't like it. But the reason they don't like it really is because, well, it shows Donald Trump winning. It has caught the trend lines. I mean, you can see in the trend lines for the LA Times tracking poll, the momentum shift back towards Donald Trump. So she's slightly ahead, but barely. I don't believe that the polls are rigged, though. Take the polling averages. The polling averages serve you well. The polling averages tend to be fairly accurate. They're not stacking the deck here. These people have livelihoods they want to take care of by being accurate pollsters. But what about the exit polls? The exit polling is done completely differently from random surveys. Here's the way the exit polls are done. They first of all look at the country, and here's what they know. They know that Trump is going to win Mississippi. They know that Trump is going to win Louisiana. They know that Trump is going to win Texas. They know that Hillary Clinton is going to win California. They know that Hillary Clinton is going to win New York. They know Hillary Clinton is going to win Hawaii. So they put a couple people there because they want some state-level exit polls for the Senate and congressional races, but they focus their resources, and they're going to focus, by the way, on the metro Atlanta area. You may see exit pollsters at your polling precinct this year because Georgia's considered a swingy state. But they're really focusing on Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Nevada, where else? Wisconsin, Iowa, places like that. And what they'll do is they'll have pollsters, male and female pollsters, who stand at the precinct locations. And they will ask all comers to come take the survey. They used to be able to get about 65% of people at these polling locations to take the surveys. Now, how do they pick the precincts? They pick the precincts based on the swingiest areas of a state. So, you know, for example, I mean, let's just use Georgia as an example. Henry County has become a swing county in Georgia. It's headed towards the Democrats. The Republicans have held it a long time. If you're in Henry County or Gwinnett County, you may very well encounter exit pollsters at your precinct. If you're in Cherokee County, it is as Republican as can be. You're not going to see an exit pollster there because they know how that county is going to go. So they break it up that way, they do it nationally, and they wind up surveying between 100,000 and 200,000 people. A regular statistical opinion survey in the run-up to the election samples about maybe, in a good case scenario, 1,000 people. Typically, it's 700 to 800 people. The exit poll is going to cover between 100,000 and 200,000 people on election day. And even though they're not going to be able to poll everyone, what they are going to do is they're going to be able to make mental notes of how many men went into the polling precinct, how many women went in, how many blacks, Hispanics, Asians, whites. They'll be able to figure all of that stuff out so they can model statistically accurately the way those precincts look so that they can get a good idea of how that area voted. And they're going to have it spread out throughout key swing counties and then key swing states, and they'll be able to model the turnout nationally. But what about the early votes? Well, they have a methodology to consider the early votes. I learned this today, actually, and it's worth sharing as to how the exit pollsters are able to conduct surveys of people who early voted. Here's some news for you. Welcome back. Quinnipiac poll of Georgia just out. Trump 44, Clinton 43. NBC News, Wall Street Journal, Marist poll of Georgia, Trump 45, Clinton 44. So 1 point race between them. Trump's going to win Georgia. I mean, I just don't see Clinton winning Georgia. It's going to be closer. And does that put Johnny Isaacson back in runoff territory? Johnny had actually crossed the threshold of 50% of the polling averages for his race, and this pulls him back under it. Maybe he goes into a runoff. Okay. So the exit polling data. So they're going to cover 100,000, 200,000 people around the nation, strategically located in key precincts of key swing counties in swing states across the nation. But what about the early vote? You know, the bulk of votes are going to come from early voters this year. For the first time in American history, the pollsters are expecting 40 to 45% of the vote to be cast on election day. And the rest of it, the other 55 to 60% cast in early voting. So states trust the Edison Consortium. The Edison Consortium is the group that does the exit polling for the networks. The one group does the exit polling for the Associated Press, Reuters, AFP, CNN, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox News, MSNBC, PBS, all of them. One group does it. And the reason they're so trusted is because they are completely anonymous surveys. You're going to have somebody come up to you. They're going to give you a form at your exit polling location. It's going to have no identifying information on it at all. You fill out the survey, you put it in a box, and every few hours they take the box away and scan them. There's no way to trace it back to you. With the early voters, a lot of states, and I did not know this until today, a lot of states will give the Edison Consortium a list of people who have early voted and had their votes processed. And by that I mean, so for example, my wife and I cast our early ballot or our absentee ballots. They had to go back to the Board of Elections and they had to be accepted by the Board of Elections, meaning we had to have signed the back of the envelope. Otherwise, they get rejected. So once that happens, then the Edison Consortium gets lists of these early voters and they can call those early voters and statistically sample them as well so they get a very good idea. So why do people think the exit votes are always so wrong? I'll tell you when we come back. Congratulations to my buddy Tucker Carlson. He is going to be taking Greta Van Susteren's spot permanently on Fox News at 7 p.m. Good for him. Tucker is a great, great guy. They made the announcement earlier today. Britt Hume's in that slot right now, and Tucker will be doing it after the election. Pretty awesome for him. Now, the exit polls. If you're just tuning in, been talking about the exit polls, how they do them, why they're so much better than regular surveys. And I don't think the regular surveys are wrong, although I think you should trust the average of the surveys, not the individual survey. I mean, take, for example, 1980. There's the legend continues that Ronald Reagan was behind until the last week of the campaign and suddenly surged ahead and won. That's not actually the case. He surged ahead in the Gallup poll, and all the Gallup poll did was come in line with all the other polls. Had you taken the polling average of all of the major national polls in 1980, Reagan went ahead in July of 1980 and never fell back behind. Take the polling average. Whatever you do, don't ever take an individual poll. Take the polling averages. With an exit poll, it's different because instead of polling 400, 500, 600, 700 people who are likely voters, you're actually surveying 100 to 200,000 actual voters and doing a demographic representation by the area in which they live, not nationally. They conform the national demographics to each locale. Now, what do they do with the early voters? The secretaries of state in many of the states give the Edison Consortium, the group that does the exit polls, they give them the data on who has voted and had their vote processed. By processed, I don't mean counted. I mean actually returned to the Board of Elections or done on an electronic machine at the Board of Elections and put into the system for tabulation on Election Day. Some people, they get an absentee ballot and they return it, but they forget to sign the envelope and their vote's not actually processed until they come in and sign the ballot. So they survey those early voters, and they know for certain that they're surveying people who actually have voted, not people who possibly voted early. But why are they considered so inaccurate? The reason goes back to 2004, when the story began circulating that Bob Shrum, the political consultant for John F. Kerry, went in and referred to him as Mr. President when he got the 5 p.m. exit survey data. There is a problem with the 5 p.m. exit survey data. The 5 p.m. exit survey data covers people who voted throughout the workday after lunch. Those people tend to be Democrat. So the survey results, the exit poll results trickle out over the day. You have the early votes of when people voted. They come out about noon to the newsrooms. And by the way, they're completely embargoed. They're very private. When I was at CNN, for example, they had a designated group of people who received and processed the exits internally, and no one else knew until the end of the day. Even the reporters, like, for example, John King, Wolf Blitzer, Anderson Cooper, they were not given information on the exit polls until after the 5 p.m. exit polls were released, even though they had been processed all day. So you had the exit polling consortium sending in the morning results around 9, 10 a.m. Then the 9 to noon stuff, stuff would trickle out about noon. And then the noon to 5 stuff would trickle out after 5 o'clock. That's where the John Kerry campaign got tripped up. They looked at just that data. And then there's the additional data that happens in the afternoons until the polls close. And the exit polling consortiums process that information as quickly as possible. They try to do it in real time, scanning the results and feeding them into the system, so that when the polls close, they can provide final exit data. And that final exit data, and this is the key, the final exit data is adjusted based on the racial demographic of the people who have actually voted. So what happens during the day is you're just getting the exit polling unweighted. Again, it's a statistical sample, so you have to weight the sample. They're keeping track throughout the day of how many male, how many female, how many black, white, Asian, Hispanic people have voted, but those early votes aren't necessarily weighted. At the end of the day, the final exits, they weight all of the exit poll data, and they pass that out and comport it to the weighting of statistics of who showed up to actually vote. So the Kerry campaign didn't wait for the weighting. They presumed that based on their analysis of what it would be weighted, that John Kerry was going to win, and they got it wrong. And ever since then, the exit polls have had a reputation that they are wrong, but they're not. It was John Kerry's campaign that was wrong. So, yes, somebody noted me saying this, and it actually is true. If you want the Republican exits, they tend to skew Republican in the morning and the evening. The poll closing exits tend to be Republican until they are weighted. The exits that are compiled during the day tend to be more Democrat, and it does have to do with work patterns. It actually does do with work patterns. But particularly, not that Democrats are working, but many Democrats, particularly in unionized states, in union jobs, get the day off on election day. And so they can go show up at any time. So they'll go out in the morning and canvass for Democrats and then go vote later. So you have this wave that the 5 p.m. exits always tend to lean Democrat. So if you see 5 p.m. exit polls coming out on Tuesday and they show overwhelming Democratic numbers, don't panic, because those numbers tend to be overwhelmingly Democrat. You got to wait and compile them all together. And the Edison Consortium does that. The polling data that we get from the exit polls is pretty doggone accurate. And what they do, and this is the important thing, that, and I want you to know, the other reason secretaries of state trust the Edison Consortium so much is that they don't ask voters who they voted for. Now, some of you are saying, maybe you should have told this at the beginning, huh? What? What they do is they ask voters about issues. And they can determine the way a voter has voted based on the issues. For example, do you like Barack Obama? Yes or no? Do you think the policies of the Obama administration should continue? Yes or no? Do you believe the country should go in a new direction? Yes or no? Why are you voting? A, for to stop the other candidate, B, because of foreign policy, C, because of healthcare, D, because of the economy, E, because of religious values. They go through this and they can determine based on the patterns, you're probably leaning Clinton, you're probably leaning Trump. And then they'll ask, did you vote for a major party candidate or a write-in or a third party candidate? They don't actually precisely ask who you voted for. And that's another reason that they're able to stand right by the polling locations. They're the only group allowed to stand right by the polling locations. They do a very good job. They are very accurate. And what we learn from the exit polls really shapes the conversation over the next 2 years. Welcome back. It is 5:55. The phone number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. When we come back, we got a little bit of time here, but when we come back, the indictments are coming. Rumors, sources, people are saying there will be some indictments coming regarding the Clinton Foundation. I got some information on this that I'll tell you about when we get back. In the meantime, the most bizarre story, I have tried not to talk about this story, but I apparently have to. If you got kids in the car, come back in about a minute. 3, 2, 1. Ecosexuality. Y'all, apparently this is a trend started in Australia. Of course it was started in Australia. And now it's moved to Berkeley. Of course it's moved to Berkeley in San Francisco, where people apparently think that they can commune with nature by engaging sexually with nature, doing things under waterfalls and just like leaving bodily fluids in the soil and say, yes, I know the world is becoming pagan all over again. And they seem to think that this actually serves some level of good for the planet. These people need to be put on an island somewhere and left well away from the rest of us. We'll be back. Good evening. Welcome. It is 6:09. I just so happen to be Eric Erickson, and this just so happens to be WSB. Thank you for tuning in on your ride home this evening or wherever you may be. Good weather out there, and it's going to start cooling down as well, which is good, even though we're not going to get a lot of rain, which we do actually start needing at this point. In any event, let's get into some of the other news of the day beyond the Electoral College. We did have somebody call in and ask, and since this is related, let me get this out of the way quickly. Early voting versus absentee voting. I'm opposed to early voting. I'm not opposed to absentee voting. Early voting is different from absentee voting. Even though it's technically treated the same, it's different. Absentee voting, it's a printed ballot typically, and you request it, at least you used to request it, and now you can just willy-nilly get it without an excuse. You used to have an excuse. And the excuse was infirmed, elderly, traveling. Those were your three big excuses. Infirmed, elderly, traveling, or incapable of leaving work, whatever work was. And so you could cast your absentee ballot, knowing you weren't going to be able to be there on election day. Early voting is you can show up at any time, in some places up to a month ahead of time. Yes, up to a month ahead of time and start voting. North Carolina has one of the worst early voting patterns in the country. Now, this is relevant because there have been a number of studies out from the left, actually, not conservative studies, not objective studies, but left-wing studies that are showing that voter ID laws requiring photo ID to vote actually doesn't suppress the vote. Even though they're still racist, they want you to know. But it doesn't repress the vote. But the left loves early voting because they think there are long lines on election day. It makes it easier. Democrats, early voting tends to skew Democrat. They like that. I think early voting is bad because I think there is something to be said for election day being a civic ceremony in which we all participate. And I know that may sound a little hokey, but I'm actually very serious in this. I think when there is one day set aside every 4 years to pick the president of the United States, and every American has the day off work and can go choose the president, that is more meaningful than letting you go for weeks on end in the run-up to election day, and in particular as well because the news cycle changes. Look at the major momentum shift from Hillary Clinton towards Donald Trump in the last 3 weeks. In the last week alone, she has lost 60 Electoral College votes in the estimates. My buddy Dan McLaughlin notes on Twitter today that if the election is held and Donald Trump wins, every single seat where he and Hillary Clinton are statistically tied or he is less than 2 points behind, he wins. Now, he's got to win them all, and I don't know that he can do that, but if he can, he would win. That wouldn't have been true a week and a half ago. It wouldn't have been true a week and a half ago because of the news of James Comey. But by the time that news broke, upwards of 10 million people had already voted. How many of those people would have changed their vote if they knew about the FBI news? Not all of them, for sure, but a number of them would have. I am deeply opposed for that reason to early voting. I think it cheapens the process of picking new leaders in this country that should be a day. And the only people who can't participate on that specific day, those people, give them an absentee ballot. But this early voting nonsense, I think we should get rid of. I think it's unhealthy for civic engagement in society. I don't support laws that demand that voters vote. There are some countries, Belgium, Australia, you get fined if you don't vote. I think there's as much power in not voting as voting, enough power in saying I refuse to go vote because I don't like any of the choices. And that is, in effect, a vote. But I think we all ought to do it on the same day and not spread it out over time. So let's move on to the Clinton Foundation. Sources are telling Fox News, particularly telling Brett Baer, that they expect indictments in the Clinton Foundation situation. And then people are wondering why, what would be indictable? First of all, let's stop and ask who would be indicted. I know we all want Hillary Clinton to go to jail, but I don't think she's the one who's going to get indicted if there's an indictment coming. I don't see a scenario. I mean, barring there being emails on Huma Abedin's computer from Hillary Clinton saying delete all these emails so the FBI can't get them. Barring that scenario, I don't see how she goes to jail. As a conservative, I would love to have Hillary Clinton beneath a jail. But I just don't see that that's going to happen as much as I would like it. I don't think they would allow that to happen. But I do think there are possible indictments forthcoming, not for Bill and Hillary, but for others, in particular, possibly Doug Band. Doug Band was the Bill Clinton body guy in the White House. He's the son Bill Clinton never had, is how he's described. And Band left the White House with Bill Clinton and stayed with Clinton for a while and then branched out and started using his connections to start a consulting group called Teneo. And what we're finding is that there does appear to be a connection between individuals paying Teneo and Bill Clinton going and lobbying on behalf of people who use Teneo. It does appear, based on press reports, that Bill Clinton did not always, and I'm not going to say never, ever, ever, but it appears in a lot of cases Bill Clinton did not know that Teneo was getting paid by some of these corporations. I think he had to know in some cases. I mean, he's not a dumb man. I think he had to know. But that's what the press reports are right now, that he appeared to didn't know that they were getting paid, that they were paying Teneo. And then Doug Band was putting issues in front of Bill Clinton and telling Bill Clinton, you know, you're going to be in India next week. You're going to hang out with the prime minister. Why don't you raise this issue with the prime minister? There also appears to be a connection between people who had business with the Secretary of State's office when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, who made donations to the Clinton Foundation. And the question is, how did they know, and did they do it? Now, it was only about 49 entities, but that's 49 too many. My suspicion is, if there's an indictment, I think the indictment is to someone around the periphery of Bill and Hillary Clinton. I don't think it's Bill and Hillary Clinton. The main reason I don't think it's Bill and Hillary Clinton is because I don't believe that the FBI has the guts to do it. And I don't mean that disparagingly on the individual FBI agents, but the bureaucracy within the FBI, I don't believe they have the guts to indict a former president of the United States or a former first lady of the United States and major party presidential candidate. I just don't think they do. But that there are rumors swirling and credible sources saying an indictment is coming, and I don't dispute the sources, and I know people in Washington who are firmly convinced that something is afoot with the Clinton Foundation, particularly because the Justice Department was so adamant that it be shut down, and it was never shut down. an indictment may very well be coming. I would not look to the Clintons, though. I would look to the people immediately around them, whether it's Huma Abedin or Doug Band or someone like that. If an indictment's coming, I think it'll be at that level. But if it is at that level, does it not go to the judgment of the Clintons that they surrounded themselves with people like this and that they were willingly used as pawns for big businesses and for these consultants? And were they clueless? Of course they knew what was going on. The fact that they might not get indicted has nothing to do with whether or not they're indictable. It's whether or not the government wants a fight on their hands with a former president and former first lady, which I don't think the government does. Both of them probably should be under the jail, though. I'm back, 624, here at News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. The phone number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go back to the phones. Jim in Atlanta, you're up first. Welcome.
Hey, Eric. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, two quick comments. First of all, I want to applaud your authorship of You Will Be Made to Care. I think it's probably one of the most important books for people of faith of our generation.
And thank you very much.
I encourage everybody, if they haven't read it, they need to.
Thank you.
Secondly, this thing, Hillary has been leading people to go vote immediately, directly. Because you can march right over here, and I think that she's.
Jim, you're breaking up on me. Jim, I think we lost him. Sorry, Jim, your phone like went out or something. Elliot, you're up next. Elliot.
Hey.
Hi there.
Eric, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Hey. A couple of questions. Why don't they use the polls, you said something the other day about they take the vote and they hold it till election day.
Right.
Why don't they use the early voting as a gauge, you know, and let people know how their candidate's doing?
That's actually a really good question. There's a constitutional reason why. What does the Constitution say about election day? It's got to be the first Tuesday following the first Monday in November. So if you vote before then, it's not election day. So if they count the votes that occurred before the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, those votes didn't get cast on election day. Therefore, they don't count. So they have to stockpile all those votes in a system and they can't count them until election day, or constitutionally they can't count.
Gotcha.
Yep.
And the other point that I had told your screener was, I think that whether she gets elected or not, that Obama is probably going to do one last thing and kind of give her a pass on all this stuff before he leaves office.
I totally expect him to pardon her. I mean, I would not be surprised at all if he pardons her on the way out the door. Now, if he pardons her, largely she's admitting that she did something wrong. But, I mean, why not? If she wins the presidency, I mean, whether it's Trump or Clinton who wins, I don't see it being more than a one-term presidency. I mean, again, been wrong about a lot this year, but just with the dynamics of things this year, I don't know that it would be. But what does she have to lose by getting a pardon from him? Now, if she rides it out for 4 years, sure, maybe she can say, well, the statute of limitations will run out while I'm president. No big deal. I don't know that it will in some of these situations, and someone later could reopen it. They could find more information. They could revisit the situation. I am absolutely with you that I think President Obama gives her a pardon, a pass, something or other on the way out the door, whether she wins or loses. And I do think, by the way, if she loses, I think that Barack Obama gives her a blanket pardon for any and all anything. And he does it on the grounds of, we don't actually think Hillary did anything, but Donald Trump's a cuckoo. I mean, that's what he's going to say, is we can't trust that Donald Trump won't prosecute her for nothing, so I'm just going to give her a blanket pardon for everything so Trump can't touch her. That would be his excuse, and you and I both know that the majority of the media would absolutely buy that, as would about half of the nation would buy that. So one way or the other, yeah, I think she comes out of this not a problem. But Huma, Doug Band, I don't think so. Welcome back. It's Eric Erickson here. The final half hour, 6:39 in Atlanta, Georgia. The phone number 404-872-0750 or 800-972-8255. That's also 800-WSB-TALK if you're wondering. Oh, let's see. Waylon in Highlands, North Carolina. I was talking to a buddy the other night. I've never been to Highlands, and I need to get up there.
Yes, you do. It's a beautiful part of the world, Eric. Thank you indeed for taking my call and
sure.
for everything you do.
Thanks.
My question is relating to the future of the economy. My wife and I, we recently started our own business. And right now it's an online retail business, but we would love to open a storefront here in Highlands, maybe even as early as next year. But there's a lot of apprehension over the election, over the economy, and so I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on what you see going forward under a Clinton presidency, which would, I think, be disastrous, or a Trump presidency, which I know you're not keen on, and I'm not either, but just kind of wanting maybe some
right.
reassurance, I guess, or
maybe, oh, I wish I could give you some. Well, you know, listen, if Trump becomes president and carries through on the protectionism that he says he's going to support, the economy's going to crash.
Right.
And that's just, I know people don't like to think about that, but protectionism, actually the sanctions that would be imposed on us by other countries under the treaties that we're in, the costs of withdrawing from the treaties, it would be bad. And I don't actually believe he would be a protectionist once he gets in office. I think he's just saying that. There's word out today that he wants one of the heads of Goldman Sachs to be his Treasury Secretary, which suggests he wouldn't do protectionism, but would he be an aggressive free marketer? I doubt it. And that's kind of the problem here, is that I don't know that he would be an aggressive free marketer, and I don't know that he would really go after aggressively cutting the corporate income tax, and I don't think Hillary Clinton will either. I do think that if Clinton is president, because she's a Clinton and we already have all this corruption probing going on, that the Republicans at least would fight her, unlike they fought Obama. And maybe she would be forced to compromise with them to some degree. I do think she would be less of a protectionist than Trump, ironically, if Trump actually did go full protectionist. But I think that the economy under neither of them is really going to suddenly jump. I think it would take a real free market, limited government conservative in the White House to get the economy to jump. If either one of them, though, really would fix the corporate income tax. Right now, we have the highest corporate income tax of the world. Trump today said he wanted to fine businesses, make them pay a 35% surcharge on taxes if they leave the country, as opposed to incentivize keeping them here, which would be a terrible policy. But if they incentivize companies to stay by cutting the corporate income tax, then suddenly I think the economy explodes. You know, Apple has billions of dollars offshore that they won't repatriate to the United States because of the income taxes they would have to pay on them. And I think we got to change that law and give a tax amnesty to big businesses who are sheltering funds abroad, but just because they can't get them into this country without losing 35% of it in the corporate income tax. So we shouldn't have a corporate income tax in this country. We shouldn't have it because corporations don't pay taxes. They just raise the prices on goods and services and make customers cover the cost of the tax. It's factored into the price. You cut the corporate income tax, not only will you have an explosion in the economy here of massive productivity and bringing new financial resources into this country, but the cost of goods and services would go down because companies wouldn't have to continue pushing it off to customers to cover the cost. It's a no-brainer. But nobody in Washington wants to do that because the Democrats would get attacked and the Republicans would get attacked. Joe in Holly Springs, you're up next. Welcome. Joe? You there? Joe is apparently not there. JR in Norcross, you're up next. Welcome.
Hi, Eric. Hope your wife's doing great. We're praying for her.
Thank you very much.
Anyway, just wanted to say that if I had my top 5 or 10 list of all favorite best topics brought up on the Eric Erickson show, that the the one about how we need to get back to just one day to vote and make it more of a civic duty thing, and you know, more of a, like a corporate kind of a worship kind of experience. You know, like we in the church, you know, like we love corporate, you know, worship. That's sort of the same thing as voting should be. You know, that corporate spirit of you know, people getting out and doing what they should do on a given day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what, you know, if you take
You're right. The idea of corporate worship, taking communion together in a church. Right. I mean, the, voting is collectively the democratic communion of the country.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It is. Yeah. I think we've totally devalued the democratic process in this country by doing that. By the way, speaking of belittling the democratic process, what have you heard about Bill Weld? I mean, so Bill Weld, for those of you who don't know, he is the vice presidential nominee for the Libertarian Party, Gary Johnson being the nominee. The moment Gary Johnson picked Bill Weld was the moment I knew I would never vote for Gary Johnson. Bill Weld is a super liberal, near socialist. He was a Republican from Massachusetts who could get elected in Massachusetts because he was such a liberal. Republicans and Democrats alike wouldn't even confirm him to an ambassadorship for Bill Clinton. And he's out on the campaign trail now defending Hillary Clinton against the FBI and all the Republican attacks. Y'all, if there's one thing that this election this season has done, I think it has confirmed in perpetuity that the Libertarian Party is not a serious party. I do not believe the Libertarians are serious at all. They had an opportunity to this year to field a viable candidate who could go up against two people terribly disliked, and they didn't do it. They went for two clowns. I think it's probably time to, well, the Libertarians support euthanasia and euthanize the party, metaphorically speaking, of course. But, I mean, the days of the Libertarian Party, there aren't ever going to be days of the Libertarian Party. This year makes it obvious. Welcome back. It's Eric Erickson here. It is 55 after the hour. Five more minutes here. Now, before I get out of here, I want you to know a couple of things. There are more rumors afoot tonight about Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump. I'm not going to delve into any of these. They're rumors and they're BS. It's just, I mean, some of the stuff, I've already gotten emails from people. Have you heard the latest about Hillary Clinton? What the FBI and the New York City police have discovered? It's not true. Jamie Dupree is noting that a Clinton hard drive has been missing from the National Archives. It's been missing for 7 years. It's not a new thing. The stuff on Trump and women, there's another rumor out about him tonight. That's not true either. If you hear any of this stuff, we're in April Fool's Day period of the campaign, folks. Don't believe the rumors. See y'all tomorrow.